is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. On the line with us is Professor Jason Stanley. He is the Jacob Urowski Professor of Philosophy at Yale University, the author of four books, including his latest, How Fascism Works, The Politics of Us and Them. You can tweet him at Jason in Traitor, J-A-S-O-N-I-N-T-R-A-T-O-R. Or Penguin Random House. The book is published by Penguin Random House. And I'm waiting for Shira to release the line so I can put him on the phone. Maybe we're going to have to... I don't know what's going on here. I'm gonna pick up a phone call here first. AJ has been on the line for a long, long time. AJ, what's on your mind today?
I was interested in what you were saying about bias and... The fear mongering and amongst the people, and how it's being perpetuated by, I think a lot of people don't realize that the corrupt rich people, along with this corrupt corporate media, are the ones who are feeding this stuff that these weapons of mass deception to the people. And as long as we're fighting amongst each other, I was always taught, look to see who benefits from all of this.
Yep.
And we don't benefit from it. So I think the people need to start thinking more as to what is going on and who's going to benefit from us. With all this fighting, black people are not interested in taking over white people, you know, and this is just some stupidity, but it's very effective. And the more they push this stuff, the more people are distracted as to what the people who are pushing these things, what they're benefiting from it.
Yeah, I get it. And I agree. And I think it's a really important conversation. AJ, thank you. Perhaps our guest can speak to that. Professor Jason Stanley is on the line with us. As mentioned before, he is the professor of philosophy at Yale University, the author of four books. His most recent, How Fascism Works, The Politics of Us and Them. Professor Stanley, welcome back to the program. Oops. Excuse me, hybrid two. Professor Stanley? Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Tom. It's good to be back.
Thanks for joining us. So you wrote the book, How Fascism Works. First of all, your thoughts on AJ's comments, and then my question, where are we at on this on the spectrum or scale of how fascistic a country is or is moving?
So AJ makes a great point that when fascist ideology takes hold, the dominant group feels that it's being victimized by encroaching equality. So as AJ rightly said, he's like, black people in seeking liberation and seeking equality are not seeking to displace white people on a hierarchy. They're just seeking equality. But if you're used to what fascist politics does, is it gives the dominant group the sense that equality is an enormous loss, that equality, that there's no such thing as equality, that equality is a myth, that nature prefers a hierarchy. And the only way another group could achieve equality is by displacing you and becoming dominant. So AJ is targeting exactly fascist thinking. He's saying, look, for some reason they're thinking that when we're asking to get treated like white people get treated, we get the response is that we're trying to take over.
Right. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. So where is the United States at? How have we changed in terms of, being a fascist nation? How have we changed over the last 40, 50 years? And in particular, how have we changed in the last year and a half?
So my book is in the first instance about fascist politics. I think countries that get taken over by leaders who employ such politics have very different governments that result. That said, a liberal democratic culture is one that has equal respect for everyone, and truth is respected because truth is central to democracy. Democracy prizes liberty, and democracy prizes equality. And without truth, you're not free and you're not politically equal. Nobody thinks the citizens of North Korea are free. They've been lied to. So if you've been lied to, nobody thinks that the people in the Matrix are free. If you're lied to, then you're not free. Similarly, if you don't have truth, if you don't have knowledge, then you can't speak truth to power, and all that's left is power.
So this is the dilemma that people who watch Fox News all day long have.
That's right. So that's why it's important to emphasize that although fascist politics targets, in the first instance, minorities, sexual minorities, feminists, liberals, foreigners, though those are labor unions, leftists, though those are its targets, and its real target is the people it's directed at, the supporters, because they're not free. They're being lied to. And if you're being lied to, you should actually be quite upset. Now, we have a long history of that kind of lying in our country. It underlies the treatment of black Americans, for example. I mean, all the way back to the time of slavery, lynching, mass incarceration, think of super predator theory, these myths that black Americans were somehow like more violent or more dangerous rather than just much more economically disadvantaged. They have led to people becoming inured to being lied to. And what we see now is that spilling over the top. Of course, it didn't help that we had the Iraq war and the financial crisis. So where we are now, what worries me now, besides the loss of a grip on reality in our national politics, what worries me now is the encroachment of a one-party state. Hannah Arendt warns about this in The Origins of Totalitarianism. She says, the people get tempted by party over party. And what she means by that is people get tempted by loyalty to party over loyalty to a multi-party system. And when you have a minority of Americans electing a president and a minority of Americans electing the Senate, and you have a locked-in far-right, not just right, but far-right Supreme Court for generations to come, we're risking a one-party state. And that is inimical to our democracy. Now, so I think on two dimensions we have serious worries. We've lost democratic norms. We've lost grip on reality. Loyalty is replacing reality. We've lost a grip on equal respect. We've normalized our fellow people being called horrible things. That's normal now. We've normalized horrific treatment of fellow human beings. And so I'm concerned about both those developments.
Yeah. What do we do about this? You look at Orban's Hungary or the Philippines, Duterte, or Erdogan in Turkey. These are countries that, supposedly had vibrant, healthy, small-d democratic systems and now have slid into, at the very least, oligarchy, if not outright autocracy. Or fascism, to use your term. How do we avoid that happening here?
Well, I think we... I'm actually not that... I'm worried. I think we have a lot of repair of democratic norms to do. But I think that we look to groups. I think women are taking political lead right now. Fascism is strongman politics that involves sort of a strong, somebody presenting them as a strong macho leader. And we have a strong reprisal against that with feminist politics and women leaders. I think there's somewhat of a shock to the system right now about the open anti-democratic politics we're seeing. And perhaps now is a moment where people can go back and look at some of the fissures in our country that enabled this kind of politics to take control and maybe see that those fissures leave us vulnerable. So if Republicans and Democrats can come together and stop thinking about taking over the country for their party, and seeing that actually, our long history of anti-black racism, our long history of patriarchy, sexism, our desire to see a strong CEO leader, large economic gaps, these leave us vulnerable to the kinds of politics we're seeing. So maybe we can have a democratic socialist coming and making some policy proposals that will make sense to ordinary Americans.
From your lips to God's ears, Professor Jason Stanley, his new book is How Fascism Works, The Politics of Us and Them. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back. How does fascism work? How do you think fascism is working for, or at, or to, or against the United States? Back with your calls after this. And welcome back. Let's see here. Johnny in Lamarck, Texas. Hey, Johnny. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on your Roku box. What's up?
Hey, Tom. I wanted to agree with the earlier female caller, the black lady from Chicago, Pam. I agree with her sentiments.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame that we can't wake up more white people quicker. I think it's coming along way too slow. But I would add to her that the Occupy movement had a lot of problems because that wasn't so much about race as it was about class and income. That's why they were attacked viciously by the police. Look what they did in Ducati, and well, I forgot what they call it now, it's Ducati Park, but they were renamed by the activists then in 2011, so there's that.
Yeah. No, you're right, and the it's like the machine reacts to anybody who tries to challenge its power, authority, and wealth, whether they're challenging it out of an economic place or out of a racial place or out of a geographic place or out of a religious place. That's just the nature of institutions. They fight to protect their privilege and their power.
Yeah, that's what I love about language. You just said machine, and I'm thinking maybe we need to take this machine and take it from automatic and put it into a manual, manual control of this device. This automatic car is killing us.
Well, and that's, you know, I would say to the extent that the Supreme Court in the last, you know, 100 years has put the machine more and more on automatic drive by changing the rules of the game. So now it's harder and harder for people to start new businesses, for example, or compete. I mean, you know, yeah, you nailed it. Johnny, well said. Thank you very much for the call. Let's see here. David in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hey, David, hope the storms didn't get you. What's up?
Yeah, we came out of the storms all right.
Good.
Anyway, as far as your topic for the first hour, this is why I love your show, because you said what I've been thinking for a long time. And anyway, upcoming elections, definitely 2020, maybe 2018, I'm not really sure. Concern I have about Trump is, A, he's very good at messaging, and B, what he's done so far and will probably continue to do is exploit, you know, the positive economic indicators that we're seeing that are, you know, continuations from the Obama years, you know, the lowering unemployment rate, and he loves to talk about the stock market.
Well, he also goosed it considerably with his tax cut. I mean, that is a stimulus. It's not the kind of stimulus that actually helps the country, but it's the kind of stimulus that will help him through this next election.
Yeah, and that's
which is what it was all about.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you going to do about it?
I just kind of wanted to bounce that off of you.
Well, I think
that's going to happen.
Making sure, I think it's entirely possible. I would make sure that I was registered to vote. I would make sure that as many friends as I have and relatives and people that I can discuss politics with are registered to vote. I would make sure that people know that there's a thorough and exhaustive Republican voter suppression effort going on all across the country, where they're pushing millions of people off the voting rolls, and continuing to at the rate of tens of thousands a day. And, you know, make sure that people are registered to vote, things like that. Because, David, I think at this point, the ballot box is our last hope. I mean, you know, if we lose the ballot box, then it's to the streets, and then it gets real messy. And I don't want that to happen. David, thank you for the call. And thanks for listening to us on the Tom Hartman app there. It's 21 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Professor Jason Stanley warning us about fascism. And yes, this is how fascism works. This is how these things just kind of roll along. I shared with you this you know, what the Republicans are doing with regard to Brett Kavanaugh, it looks like they're going to refuse to allow, the Democrats want other witnesses. I think this Mr. Judge guy, who was the young man who was supposedly in the room with Kavanaugh when he tried to when he is alleged to have tried to rape the Ms. Ford, Dr. Ford, and then Judge later, his last name later, wrote about how during that period of his life he was suffering alcoholic blackouts and boys will be boys and, you know, manly privileges and all this kind of weird stuff. The Republicans do not want that man to be testifying before Congress. The Democrats are very interested in talking to him. The Republicans do not want the FBI to look into this. The Democrats are saying, we're entitled to know all this stuff. The Republicans continue to hide 90% of all the papers associated with Brett Kavanaugh's years in the White House. The Democrats are saying, hey, wait a minute, we really would like to know what the heck is going on here. We're entitled to. You know, this is in some ways such a charade, what's going on. And then you get this Judge Kaczynski, I think his name is, who Kavanaugh used to clerk for. He's retired now, but he apparently was a serial harasser of women. And Kavanaugh was his best bud. And, you know, the Republicans don't want to talk about that either. So, you know, a lot going on there. But, you know, this is Judge Alex Kaczynski. 15 different women came forward to say that he harassed them when he resigned in December of last year. And this from The Hill, hillreporter.com. Multiple court employees approached attorney Cyrus Sinai, he says, to share concerns and stories before the confirmation of Kavanaugh. None of them wanted to go on the record because they're afraid of retaliation. Apparently, Kavanaugh is somebody who, if he doesn't like you, he makes sure that you're destroyed. Kaczynski, who resigned, was the judge for whom Brett Kavanaugh clerked. And during his confirmation hearings, Kavanaugh denied any knowledge of Kaczynski's sexually predatory behavior. Right. Cyrus Sinai calls for Congress to place a focus on judges who made the judiciary safe for Kaczynski to satisfy his deviant needs. And it was Kavanaugh one of those judges or one of those lawyers? I mean, this is a guy, Kaczynski, who came to a party and the limousine opened, he stepped out, and two young, attractive young women were on either arm, and they were clerks for him. I mean, he was just right up front about what he was doing. And this is where Brett Kavanaugh, you know, made his way as a clerk. Tom Arnold is insisting that the N-word tape from Trump's apprentice days actually exists, and that he may even have a copy of it. There's others saying, no, it's just Tom Arnold talking through his hat. You know, we'll see what happens with that. I think I mentioned that Justice Roberts halted the three-judge D.C. Circuit panel. All three judges, including a Republican nominee, said that the Karl Rove's super PAC, Crossroads GPS, has to reveal its donors. And John Roberts jumped in and said, no, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do that. Canada is going to legalize marijuana next month nationwide. They're going full tilt boogie on this. And so now the Executive Assistant Commissioner for Customs and Border Protection's Office of Field Operations, a guy named Todd Owen, he says that anybody who's Canadian who has ever smoked pot legally is banned from coming into the United States for the rest of their lives. And the only way to stop the Trump administration from enforcing this is for Congress to change the laws. Meanwhile, in Canada, Coke is looking at making a CBD-infused Coca-Cola, a cannabis-infused drink. And they're quite serious about it. They're in merger talks with one of the largest cannabis growers in Canada that makes CBD. CBD is the stuff that is good for pain but doesn't get you high. And they're talking about, you know, lacing Coca-Cola with that, which is really interesting, and I think it would have a huge market. So, a lot on the table. This election, Larry Kudlow says, the last chance to stop Republicans from privatizing Social Security and Medicare and destroying Medicaid and Obamacare. He's all in favor of those things, of course. But if the Democrats take charge, we won't be able to do that. Republicans really want to destroy Social Security and Medicare. Will they?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
I mean, they are just full tilt boogie for the two Santa Claus theory. Oh, we've got too much debt to be able to afford to pay for people's health care. Are you kidding? It's 34 minutes past the hour, the Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. Just don't tell Limbaugh, he will want some. FEMA was going to do a, or they've kind of rolled out this nationwide emergency system for things like, you know, nationwide emergencies. And they could be used locally or could be used nationwide. And Donald Trump heard about it and was like, hey, that's kind of like Twitter, isn't it? It just, you know, shows up on everybody's cell phone simultaneously all across the country. And they were like, yeah, that's how it works. And he's like, well, let's not call it a FEMA alert. Let's call it a presidential alert. So get ready. They were going to test it on Thursday, but they decided to postpone it because there actually is an emergency going on with this storm that's stalled out because global warming has messed with the jet stream. So, you know, the Carolinas and Georgia and whatnot are getting just piled in rain, but that's going on. Anyhow, let's pick up some of your phone calls here. Jordan in Frankfort, Kentucky, it says you disagree with me. What's up?
Hey, what's new, Tom? How you doing?
I'm well. What's on your mind?
So I would like to go back to earlier. You were discussing the Trump tax cuts, and I consider myself more of a mainstream conservative. I'm definitely no Trump apologist, but it seems to me you have plenty of fodder to attack Trump on. The tax cut is just not one of them. The tax cuts indisputably save lower-income Americans on their taxes versus higher-income Americans. The doubling of the standard deduction is just a reality that you have to admit.
The tax cut, 87% of all benefit for that tax cut goes to the top 10% of Americans.
That's because they make so much of the income. But
sure.
As far as who gets a percentage cut of their income, the largest percentage goes to any Americans like me who make under $100,000 a year.
Well, that's unfortunate because you're going to see your wages go down over time as a result of that.
Oh, no, I've only seen mine go up. I don't know. In business,
no, you've not seen your wages go up. You've seen your take-home pay go up. And your employer knows it. And your employer knows that you have more money in your pocket now. And so therefore, your employer knows that he or she no longer has to give you a raise. And in fact, if you're replaced, they will hire somebody who will work for even less than you.
Well, I'm
over time. I'm telling you, Jordan, you need to think this through for a second because you're not thinking this through. You're doing exactly what Fox and the Republicans want you to do. You're thinking like a billionaire. If you're a billionaire and you control your own income, when your taxes go down, the amount of money you have left over goes up. If you're an average working person, you don't control your own income. And when your taxes go down, yes, your take-home pay goes up. But over time, the dynamics of the marketplace will cause employers to reduce your pay. In fact, if you look over the last 80, 90 years, you can see this consistently. If you look in 3 and 4 and 5 year slices, you will find that every time there is a consequential tax cut to middle class and working people, wages go down over the next 5 years. Every time there's a substantial increase in taxes on working people, wages go up over the next 5 years. Because the bottom line is employers know where the labor market is at. They know what people are willing to work for. And they're going to adjust that up or down based on the impact of taxes. This is why in Denmark, where about 42% of your income goes to taxes, if you're making in U.S. equivalent of $40,000 a year, in Denmark, McDonald's pays $24.70 an hour.
Denmark has a population roughly 1/100th of America.
Doesn't matter. My point, I'm talking about taxes, not population. And I'm telling you, you could use the example of Canada. Use the example of the United Kingdom. Use the example of the entire European Union, which is four times the size of the United States, twice the size of the United States, more than twice the size of the United States, in every case. When taxes go down on rich people, they get more money. When taxes go down on working people over time, they get less pay. When taxes go up on working people over time, they get more pay. so that their take home ends up equalized. And when taxes go up on rich people over time, they end up with less money and society ends up with more resources. It's just that simple, Jordan. I don't understand how you don't get this.
Well, it's very simple math. Just recently it came out that the average household income in America is actually up to approximately $60,000 a year. Now, when all those people pay at the marginal level of 10 or 15%, and when their standard deduction doubles as a married couple from $12,000 to $24,000, or as a single person from $6,000 to $12,000, they pay less in taxes. That's just a fact.
And you're making my point, Jordan. They pay less in taxes, and their employers are going to look at this and go, oh, look at this. Ralph's took home an extra $2,000 this year. I guess I don't need to give him a pay raise.
Well, that's just not factually correct at all.
You don't think employers think like that? You think employers just sit around and say, gee, how can we get more money to our employees? You know, the government just gave them a couple $1,000 extra. I guess we should too. Come on, Jordan, you're not that naive.
I'm a small-time employer, and I think that way. It's not just about me. It's about, because when my employees do better, I do better.
Also, of course.
The pie is growing. The pie is not shrinking. The pie is not fixed. The more money there is in the economy, the more money there is for everybody. I don't know why you have to have this zero-sum game view of things. Obviously, that's not true. We have more capital in the world today than we did 10 years ago.
And we have more debt in the world than we've literally ever had before. But at a certain level, it is a zero-sum game. The more that the billionaires take, the less there is for all of us. And that's what Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell are saying right now when they say that after the election, they've got to cut Social Security, they've got to cut Medicare, they've got to cut long-term unemployment insurance, they've got to cut Medicaid, because all of these things have to be cut in order to pay for the tax cut for the billionaires and for everybody else.
As everyone's doing better, you can afford to cut social programs because they're not as necessary. They're doing better on their own dime rather than sucking off the government teat.
And that's the exact time when you should be strengthening those programs, because you don't need them as much during good times, although not everybody's having good times. But you will need them during the next recession. Jordan, we're going around in circles here, but I think we've both made our points. Pastor John in Connecticut. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey there, Tom. How you doing?
Good.
Listen, boy, that last call, people just are drinking the Kool-Aid. With Kavanaugh, I want you to see what you think. I'm hoping the Democrats spell out that, listen, there has been no FBI investigation. The president doesn't want to do that right now, all right? Which means it'll be a he said, she said.
Yep.
Which means they have to talk to these white women in the suburbs, soccer moms, and remind them that Dr. Ford has not really had a day to say her piece, because there's been no investigation. What do you think?
I think you're right, and I think this is much more radioactive on another level, which the Republicans are very, very conscious of, and that is that Anita Hill was a black woman. And so it was very easy for the white men, and that's all that was sitting there at that time, the white men on the Senate Judiciary Committee, to ignore her, or in the case of Orrin Hatch, actually trash her. Professor Ford, I haven't seen a picture of her, but I bet just about anything she's a white woman. And
yes, she is. I saw a picture of her.
Okay, and so she is going to be afforded the privilege of that, and it's going to be and again, Republicans would not be in power if white women weren't voting for them. And 53% of white women voted for Donald Trump in the last election. And here it's going to be real interesting to watch the Republicans going after a white woman. So, I think Anita Hill would be treated differently today than she was back in the day, somewhat, but not as much as I believe Dr. Ford will be. I'm not, a fan of that being the reality. I think it's a sad commentary on our society, but that is the reality. John, thanks for the call. Eric in Wichita, Kansas. Hey, Eric, what's on your mind today?
Good morning.
Hey. Thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's up?
Well, thank you. I'm a 79-year-old man. I have a lot of time to read and study history. And I just recently did a complete study on the wisdom of history. And I got three things I think is important. Is there meaning to history? Do we learn from history? And are there consequences to our failure to learn from history? And unfortunately today, and even our education, people don't have the time to study history, sit back and really think about it. What does it teach us? Mm. And I believe right now we're in a process as a nation no longer becoming a superpower. And we are in a process, if we don't make some great course changes and listen to each other, that we will be controlled by another superpower, and it won't be the United States. And what will the wisdom of history teach later generations about America and its place in history? And I think if we don't really get come together as a nation, we're probably in the next 100 years we'll be divided in 2 or 3 different nations.
Yeah, I think it is possible. Eric, your points are all well taken, and you know it's a cliche. Those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. But it's true. I mean, most cliches are based in truth, and Eric's point is well made. We need to be studying our own history. We'll be back. It's 2:15.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
45 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. And welcome back, Carol in Manassas, Pennsylvania. Hey, Carol, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Hi. Yeah, 2 things. First, I want to say I just finished Jason Stanley's book, and it's excellent.
Mm.
He makes such a good point about how you cannot be free unless you have a truthful government.
And truthful media.
We don't have that.
Yeah.
We don't have that. But that isn't why I called. I called because I have a question about the Kavanaugh nomination.
Uh-huh.
Let's assume for a moment that they do allow a hearing where she has her right to speak and then he has his right to speak.
Hmm.
And let's assume for a moment that he was very, very drunk that night, which I think by all accounts he was, and he was in a blackout. He would very likely believe what he is saying, and he would probably also pass a lie detector test because he doesn't recall the incident. And that's troubling because it's definitely going to come down to a no-win situation where it's he said or she said, and it's just going to go tribal on us. That's what I see, that the Democrats will all see it one way and the Republicans will see it the other way.
My guess is that if he did this once, he's done it more than once.
That's what I'm hoping to hear.
And that's, yeah. I mean, that's, this is what we saw with Harvey Weinstein. This is what we see with these guys who you know, they look out at the world of womanhood and see, you know, like a kid in a candy store. Oh, here's one. And that leaves a trail. And that's why the Democrats want the FBI to investigate. And that's why the Republicans don't want the FBI to investigate.
Well, I think even more so, for me anyway, is his lying. I really am concerned about having another liar, one in the White House and one on the Supreme Court, because I do believe he lied to Congress.
Oh, well, that's been proven. You know, it's I think to the satisfaction of pretty much everybody that in his two hearings to get on the D.C. Circuit. He lied. Yeah, I'm with
he
you.
He did. He lied. And a liar, you can never trust a liar.
Yeah, yeah.
Never.
And the question, and frankly, I think if any nominee that had been put up by a Democrat was found to have lied to Congress, that would be it. They would be toast. I mean, it would be over in seconds.
Oh, and their hair would be on fire.
Yeah.
No doubt.
I'm just astonished. I mean, he lied about participating in criminal partisan activity, stealing emails from Democratic senators where they're planning strategy on how they're going to go up against the Republicans with a judicial nominee. He received those from Manny Miranda, the Republican guy who was working for, I think, Orrin Hatch on the committee. He received these stolen emails. He passed them along to other Republicans, this being Brett Kavanaugh. Passed them along to other Republicans, engaged in conversations and meetings about them, and then denied it under oath when he testified in 2002 and 2004 before Congress, or 2004 or 2006, whatever it was. When he was up for that judgeship on the D.C. Circuit Court. And the first time, it was so obvious he was lying that they put his nomination on hold and they let it expire. And, you know, then it got brought up again. But this guy, you know, he's the one that the Federalist Society, the billionaire front group, wants, and you know, they're going to do everything they can to get him. Carol, thank you for the call. These are very, very legitimate and serious concerns. It's 10 minutes before the hour. We'll be right back. Let's see here. Much on our minds. Sherman in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Let's see, on AM 1510 in Milwaukee. Hey, Sherman, what's up?
Hey, how you doing today?
Good.
I wanted to make a couple points of this conversation, of everything as far as this Supreme Court justice person.
Mm-hmm.
This is something personal. We had a family member that was a straight-up rapist in our family. He raped his mother, he raped his grandmother, and he raped his wife, and he had some kids by his kids. So it was a lady who called this program earlier talking about that she has regrets from the day she had an abortion. So what if the person that I knew from my family raped his mother and had a baby by his mother, because at that time she was still childbearing, able to bear a child? Should she be able to keep that? Should she be forced to keep this baby? Some of the kids still had the kids.
Right.
And would you want a person like this dude on the court saying, you know, no woman should, listen, I'm a man. I shouldn't have a right to tell a woman she shouldn't have an abortion. It's because it's no telling what that person is going through.
Yeah.
I also have family members that I know for a fact shouldn't have kids. This is personal to me. Shouldn't have kids. At the same time, we have a president that won't even admit that he made a mistake. It's something that simple. He won't. I've never in my life, I'm 45 years old, I've never in my life heard a person who's never did anything wrong. As far as he can tell it, he's 100%. You know, perfect. He never makes mistakes.
Yeah.
He won't admit to it. And another thing I wanted to say is that when we keep on electing a person that won't even admit that he made a mistake or a bad choice, something like that, where does that lead us at?
Yeah, no, it's a bad example for politics. It's a bad example for personality. It's a bad, you know, just broadly a bad example. Sherman, excellent points all. And I would add, you know, this is the thing, that the point that Louise keeps making to me is, you know, if Brett Kavanaugh is being accused of this kind of rapey behavior, do you really want him to be the guy deciding the fate and future of women's bodies and women's lives? Because that's what it's coming down to. That's exactly what it's coming down to. Nathan in North Dakota. Hey, Nathan, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of touch base. When you're talking about the tax records and you're saying, or not the tax, the tax cuts, you're saying that the tax cuts will actually lead to a decline in real wages?
Yeah, they have ever since Reagan did them.
I agree with that. Well, that might be a case in certain situations, but with the economy and unemployment keep going down and down and down, companies have to compete for workers. You know, they're going to have excess capital that they're going to want to deploy. If they expand at all, they're going to have to hire more people. And that will push wages up, or at least maintain.
We gave corporations $1.5 trillion. Well, a lot of it actually went to billionaires, but we gave corporations about $1 trillion in tax cuts. And we've had over $800 billion in share buybacks now, which is where companies reduce the amount of stock out in the marketplace in order to increase the value of the stock, because their senior executives are compensated with stock. They're just taking the money for themselves. And I'm telling you, you go back and look at World War II. Franklin Roosevelt raised the top tax rate for 25%. First of all, Harding came into office in 1921, okay? In 1921...
Yeah, but Tom, you're not disagreeing with my point.
I am making my point. When Harding came in 1921, the top tax rate was 91%. Harding dropped that to 25%. Wages actually went down during the Roaring Twenties. Look it up. Wealth went up, but it was stock market wealth. It was phony baloney wealth. He deregulated the banking industry, deregulated the stock industry, and brought us the Great Crash. But wages went down. Franklin Roosevelt raised the top tax rate to 91%. And from then until 1967, it was 91%. And what happened, and even at the low end, you know, the lower tax rates were higher than they are now. What happened? Wages steadily grew during that 35-year period. Reagan comes into office. He reverses that. He takes the top tax rate, which at that point was 74%. Excuse me. That's where LBJ fixed it in 1967. He drops that down to 25%, and what happens? Wages have been flat literally since Reagan did that. Wages go up in response. Working people's wages go up in response to taxes going up. Working people's wages go down in response to taxes going down. You can look not just. I just gave you the history of the United States from 1900 to today, and you can you can easily look it up. You can also look it up for any other country in the world. This is an absolute reality that Grover Norquist doesn't want you to know about. The only people who see more money at the end of the year, and really because it takes 2 or 3 years for these effects to become visible, because in many cases, it's not that workers say to individual, or employers say to individual workers, well, you got a tax cut, you've got $2,000 extra in your paycheck every day or every year, so I'm not going to give you a raise. I mean, certainly they don't do raises anymore in large part for that reason. But also, the main way that they lower wages is replacing people. They replace a $30,000 person with a $26,000 person. And that's the trend that we've, again, been seeing since Reagan cut taxes. So, you know, this is not rocket science, Nathan. On the other hand, if you're rich, which are the people who are defining tax policy, and you control your own income, as taxes go down, your extra money, leftover money, goes up. As taxes go up, your leftover money goes down. And the job that Fox News and the right-wing machine has had and the Republicans have had for the last 40 years is to convince Americans that the same tax policies that affect billionaires will affect them the same way. And the average working people doesn't realize it's the exact opposite. It's literally the opposite. Taxes going down will cause your paycheck to go down. Taxes going up will cause your paycheck to go up over time, always. Thanks so much for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us, including you. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.